I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this, I almost said Monday, but it's not, it's Tuesday, because we're doing an all things political because I wasn't here live yesterday. So Indiana primary today, close to a presidential race. We made all things political on Tuesday, so that's what's happening this hour of the program. The Indiana primary, of course, is today. Donald Trump is expected to win. He said, if we win Indiana, it's over. They're finished. They're gone. What happened to the Stop Trump movement? And Trump already has nearly 1,000 delegates. It seems as though he's well on his way and probably could get the number that he needs even before California. What do you think? Hillary Clinton appears to be about 5 points ahead of Bernie Sanders in the Hoosier state, although you never know with poll numbers. It does look like she is the nominee of the party, or will be. Again today, Donald Trump talked about, I don't know why he does this, about a photo that was published last month by the National Enquirer showing Lee Harvey Oswald and another man distributing pro-Castro leaflets in New Orleans. The paper says the other man is the father of Ted Cruz, and Trump seems to be on this refrain. Why? We will talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner because our guest was there. And we'll look at, you know, a number of issues. I was reading over the weekend that millions of Republican voters will vote for Hillary Clinton instead of Donald Trump. Do you think that that is a possibility? Ted Cruz, of course, announcing Carly Fiorina as his running mate. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Terrence Samuel is Washington politics editor for The Washington Post. He is a veteran political journalist, served as managing editor of congressional coverage for the National Journal, and a former national correspondent for both the Philadelphia Inquirer and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. He was chief congressional correspondent for U.S. News and World Report. He helped launch TheRoot.com, and he is the author of The Upper House, A Journey Behind the Closed Doors of the U.S. Senate, and was a featured contributor to the anthology The Best American Political Writing of the Year 2009. I told you he was at the White House Correspondent Dinner. We'll play a little bit of what was said at that dinner and get his response to it as well. I didn't have a chance to see it. I was out of town, but KP has put together some clips of some pointed things that were said, of course, by Larry Wilmore. So that's the hour. Feel free to join us. Terrence Samuel, thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Before we get to the dinner, which I'm really anxious to hear about, let's talk about the Indiana primary. Do you agree with what Trump had to say, that if we win Indiana, it's over?
It feels this may be the truest thing he said all day. it really looks like, as you mentioned, the Stop Trump movement is at its end. And, you know, he's at, as you pointed out, 950, almost 1,000 votes if you count unpledged uncommitted delegates. 57 out of Indiana, or close to that, and Indiana is a winner-take-almost-all. Mm-hmm. That puts him at almost 85% of what he needs.
Wow.
It looks like Donald Trump is the nominee of the Republican Party.
Yeah, so what did happen to that Stop Trump movement that was flourishing here in Wisconsin for a brief while?
I think part of what happened with the Stop Trump movement is that it started too late, and it never actually took itself that seriously, in that there were people who essentially thought that the way to stop Trump was to let Trump be Trump and he would burn himself out, and it never happened. You know, you had a large number of people who saw themselves as the alternative to Trump. And the thinking was whoever got to the end would be the nominee, because Trump wasn't going to be the nominee, which led people to stay in longer. So there was never actually a concerted effort to stop Trump, and here we are.
Yeah. He does go off on these weird, well, he's done it for a long time, these weird tangents. Terrence, what is he talking about with this National Enquirer photo? And he, you know, is talking about that Ted Cruz's father was was with Lee Harvey Oswald before he was shot, and why don't people look into this, and why is he talking about this?
So there was a story in the National Enquirer that alleged all the things you just mentioned. And I think what Trump does, what the real value of what he did today was that it made Ted Cruz's head almost spin off of his neck.
Mm.
And that was, I think, the ultimate goal. You know, it led Cruz to say that he was going to finally say something that he do something that he hadn't done, which was tell you what he really thought about Donald Trump, which is interesting this late in the game.
Right.
But that is what happened. He basically said that, you know, this story alleged that Cruz's father was part of this conspiracy with Oswald to in the Kennedy assassination. And Cruz basically said, why don't you just go all the way and say that my father killed... killed Kennedy, and that he is Elvis, and that Jimmy Hoffa is buried in his backyard. So it's to say that it's getting a little crazy is to state the obvious, but I don't think there's any other way to say it.
Yeah. So give me your analysis, if you would please, about why so many, and it's not the majority, he's got a lot of people who don't like him at all, but what it is that people find attractive about Donald Trump? What's the draw?
So you know, there's been, for anybody who's been paying attention, you know, Washington has been very, very broken.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the country there is this sense that the people in charge are underperforming, in it for themselves, paying attention to the wrong things, and essentially not playing it straight with the American people. And Donald Trump comes along and basically repeats that message, and people hear what they want to hear. And he sounds like he is going to be the guy who is going to clean it up. And I think there are a lot of people who are just, you know, feeling disenfranchised and dispossessed and feeling like the country, whatever progress it's making, is not working for them. And Donald Trump says that's true, that, you know, the guys in Washington, the guys in charge, are basically playing a game that's fixed and not working for you, and I'm going to change that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds good.
But Bernie Sanders has a similar kind of message, obviously very different messages on other kinds of issues, but when it comes to people not doing very well and not keeping up with inflation and their paychecks are not doing well and the gap between the rich and the poor, nobody says that better than Bernie Sanders. Why aren't people flocking to him in larger numbers?
Well, some people are flocking to Bernie in that party. So what you have with Trump is this, you take the Bernie inequality system not working for you message and you add a little bit of anti-immigration, homophobia.
Right.
You let people who want to hear a little bit of racism in it, you let them do that, and you have this kind of unbelievably fierce kind of coalition forming around Trump, which is almost willfully ignorant of any of the kind of factual policy shortcomings that he might represent. And in part, the Republican Party kind of set itself up for this by kind of playing to that extremist crowd in the aftermath of 2009 and 2010, which began kind of as an anti-Obama movement.
Right.
That turned into the Tea Party movement. You know, Trump was there talking about the president's birth certificate. A lot of those voices won in 2010 when Republicans took back the House, and it became kind of a dominant message. It was not a message of let's actually reduce the size of government. It was let's kind of blow up this place because it's not working for us. And you know, we've heard the argument that chickens are coming home to roost.
Mm-hmm.
For the party itself, I think that's true. For the people who are supporting Trump because they feel somewhat kind of out of step or alienated by what's happening in the country, some of those people could have been Bernie Sanders voters. I think the kind of disaffection that you're seeing on both sides represents that. But then, obviously, like I said, there is this this tinge of something more sinister on the Trump side.
Mm-hmm. Terrence, when you look at the disapproval ratings among women, among African-Americans, among Latinos, is there a chance in hell that Trump could be winning an election for the presidency of this country? Is that possible?
Well, so two things about that. A chance in hell, yes, because I think, I mean, all the models, all the predictions say that it's not likely that he could win a general election, in part because Republicans have a hard map anyway. It's difficult to see how Trump outperforms Romney in 2012 or McCain in 2008.
Right.
You know, Crystal is at the Post put together a little analysis yesterday that showed that if Hillary Clinton or whomever the Democratic nominee is, and I guess we'll get to that in a second, wins 19 states that Democrats have won since 1992, plus Florida, she is the president. And it's going to be hard for him to break through that. But also, you know, I mean, part of what happens here is I always say voters don't like to be told what to think or what people think they're going to do. You know, Trump is going to start because of the way the country is divided, you know, at, you know, like any Republican nominee at about 44%. He'll probably start at about 41 or 42. And then, you know, it's a fight for a small group of people, which at this point seems completely lost to him, but you never know.
No, isn't that the truth? You just never know.
I mean, who would have thought that we would be sitting here talking about Donald Trump as the nominee?
Isn't it crazy? I know.
I mean, this is a guy who launched his campaign by coming down an escalator.
Yeah. I know. It is crazy. And is it pretty much a given, do you think, that she's got it wrapped up, Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, I think even the Sanders people understand that they have a very, very slim chance, almost none at this point, of catching her unless something really apocalyptic happens. She's got the majority of the delegates. She's got the majority of the superdelegates locked up, and they are not about to kind of put the party through what we're seeing on the other side by going to Bernie Sanders. So I think he will get and have a prominent role come the convention, but he is not going to be the nominee.
Mm. Somebody wrote, just gathering lots of things because people have been writing a lot about this, that Clinton should resist, and she has moved to the left in this primary season, that she should resist the temptation to move left in an attempt to win over Sanders supporters. It's better to pretend that Sanders had never entered the race, otherwise she might get burned.
There is equal analysis on the other side that says that she's already moved left, and that you know, Bernie's effect on the Clinton campaigns already happened. I think you know, the Clinton people have been pretty steadfast. You know, she's been running this campaign for a long time, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and I think they have a pretty clear idea of how they're going to go right down the middle. I think it would have been more tempting for her to do that earlier rather than later. I mean, I think now that it seems that she survived the Bernie challenge, it's unlikely that she will move dramatically left to get those people. And I think the thinking is that she won't have to. She'll have a Republican nominee to help her bring the party together.
And do you think, somebody also suggested, that millions of Republican voters are so unhappy with Donald Trump that they'll vote for her? Is that conceivable?
That is conceivable. I think particularly women who find some of what he says and how he's portrayed either offensive will vote for Hillary. And, you know, there's not been a lot, nearly as much talk about this groundbreaking event of the first woman president as, say, we had you know, 8 years ago with the first African-American right. president. But I think the closer we get to that reality, I think it moves a lot of people in that direction.
You do? You think people will want to vote because of the historic nature of her candidacy?
I am convinced that there are a lot of people who are going to wake up in September and October and see that there's a woman with a good chance of becoming president and will feel moved by kind of the historic moment to vote for her.
Well, we're going to welcome phone calls. We're also going to play a couple clips from the White House Correspondents' Dinner, where Larry Wilmore goes after the Democrats and goes after the Republicans. We won't play it all at once. We'll do one, and then we'll do the other. Terrence was there. He was in the audience, so he'll know how all these jokes went over. Terrence Samuel is our guest for All Things Political. He is the Washington Politics Editor for The Washington Post. He was managing editor of congressional coverage for the National Journal. He has worked at the Philadelphia Inquirer, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, was at U.S. News and World Report, and helped launch TheRoot.com. Here is our phone number. Join the conversation. Today's the Indiana primary, and it looks as though Donald Trump, well, he's expected to win today, even though it is supposed to be a state that would be favorable to Ted Cruz. But, you know, he's marching on here, and it seems inevitable to me and to many of us that he will be the nominee of the party, as it seems inevitable that Hillary Clinton will be the nominee of the Democratic Party. So we will look at the campaign and how they are likely to go after each other. We'll look at this hour. We've talked about Donald Trump's further comments about Ted Cruz's father and Cruz's response to Donald Trump. We have yet to talk about the scripted speech that Donald Trump gave last week, laying out his foreign policy, what you thought of that, avoiding nation building in the Middle East, staying out of international agreements, putting America first. So that's what we're talking about. All Things Political on Tuesday. And here is our phone number. We'd love to hear you discuss all of this with us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. And you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for Terrence Samuel, our guest for All Things Political, Washington Politics Editor for The Washington Post. And we start our calls with Carol in Green Bay. Hi, Carol.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine, good. Thank you. I am a lifelong Democrat, and I must say I got over the whole thing with Trump several months ago because he upset me so much that I just started thinking about it, and I thought, I am delighted that this man is winning now. I am delighted. I think it's Hillary's best chance. And I struggled. And it's interesting, Terrence, that you brought up the fact that about gender at all. It just isn't. I'm not also fired up about a woman in the White House. But I think with these Trump supporters, at the risk of sounding arrogant, when I hear some of these people talk, and they say, oh, come on, you know, all his racist comments and his homophobic comments. Oh, he's saying what all of us think anyway. And I'm thinking, these people can't be all that well informed, frankly. I just don't see it. But I'm all fired up, and for all of Hillary's faults, and I think she's a little arrogant too. But for heaven's sakes, go Trump, go. That's all I have.
All right, Carol, thanks for the call. Do a lot of Democrats share her sentiment, do you think, Terrence?
I think that Carol is kind of what the Democratic Party is counting on. You know, Hillary Clinton has been around a long time. People have all kinds of different issues with her, but they look at the Republican side and they think that people are going to be able to forgive all of those problems because you know, she's they think significantly better. The issue of whether Trump is the best person for Hillary to beat is certainly something that's been talked about. But as I mentioned, you know, once you get the nomination, once you're the major party nominee, I think that kind of alters your status, and it's going to be hard for him to win. It was going to be always hard for whomever the Republicans nominate to win, given the presidential map that they face.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, as many people in the Republican Party now think, they've made it much harder for themselves by nominating somebody who turns off so many, you know, key voting blocks,
right.
Latinos, women, independent voters. So we'll see how that goes. But I think Carol is not alone in her enthusiasm for Trump as the opponent.
Thanks, Carol, for the call. Sandy in Hanover, Illinois. Hi. Are you there, Sandy?
Hello?
Yes, Sandy. Hi. Turn the radio down, please.
I had it down and it just blanked out. Are you there now?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Right. I have a couple of huge fears. One is that I have seen all these models showing that Hillary can't beat Trump, but Bernie can. And there's always that possibility because you can never underestimate the power of a lot of stupid people grouped together. I'm a staunch Bernie supporter, but I will vote for Hillary if she takes the nomination. But I know a lot of people who say they will not vote for Hillary. They'll either write Bernie in, and we know how that always goes, or they just won't vote at all. And if that happens, we've got a President Trump, which scares me to death.
Terrence.
I think there's less concern about the Democratic Party coming back together after a Hillary-Bernie fight than is on the other side, obviously. But clearly, there's already been some concern about what to do about the Sanders part of the party once Hillary is the nominee. And people are not, at this point, panicked that you're going to have a lot of people staying home or a lot of people writing in Bernie. Because I think a lot of what we've been hearing, my reporters in Indiana this week, you know, people are saying, you know, I'm not going to vote for Hillary today just because it looks like she's going to win or just because she has a better chance of winning. But if she is the nominee, I will vote for her. That, I think, feels fairly predictable. On the Democratic side, and I think a lot of people are more worried about what's going to happen. More Republicans are worried about what their supporters who are not happy with their nominee are going to do. So I think while I think there will be a lot of effort and a lot of discussion about what Hillary needs to do to get and keep those Bernie people fired up, you know, we've heard that the vice presidential debate starting already, whether she needs to you know, get somebody who would represent that block of the party. And we have no idea what she's going to do, obviously. But there's not, as far as I can tell, a lot of concern about the party coming back together for Hillary if she is the nominee.
It will be interesting, won't it, Terrence, to see what that millennial block does as they grow a little bit older and if they do indeed move the Democratic Party substantially to the left. They're pretty left right now.
They're pretty left, but, you know, it's... I think, as somebody pointed out to me the other day, all the people who are now absolutely in Hillary's corner and don't understand what young people who see something in Bernie are doing were pretty much the same people doing the same thing not so long ago, you know, 8 years ago they tend to be less radical the older they get is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Sandy, thanks for your call. Marianne in Hurdle, hi.
Hi. I just have three words for the Bernie or bust group, and it's World War Trump. because that's what they are heading us for. It's going to be another Ralph Nader issue, and that's what they can expect. They need to understand the implications of splitting the party to this degree. And I'll take any response off the air.
So, Marianne, do you think that he needs to withdraw right away, Bernie?
I absolutely think that he needs to rein in his supporters because they are absolutely rabid on Facebook, all social media. I think you are underplaying what's going on terribly.
Terrence.
Well, I'm certainly hearing more concern so far in this program than there's no doubt that there is concern that the Bernie people are fired up and what's going to happen to them next. But I think that they're in talking to people in the Hillary campaign and kind of the Democratic establishment at large, you know, Bernie Sanders dropped his lawsuit against the DNC late last week. There is a sense that they're not heading for all-out war. But, again, sometimes that sense of what's happening in the hierarchy and the establishment doesn't always trickle down to the foot soldiers. And, you know, the most rabid, to use a one word, supporters of Bernie are not going to be happy. They're going to be heartbroken. That's what happens when you lose these, you know, intensely fought campaigns. But I think what the party is counting on is essentially what the caller says. They're going to say, look across the aisle and see what we're facing, and is it worth your while to sit this out and allow the Republicans to win?
Thanks, Marianne, for your call. Nate, Cross Plains, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've weighed in a couple of issues and a question. I think, as the former caller said, the animosity or concern, I don't think it's animosity, is too strong a word. The concern of the Bernie, I'm a Bernie backer as well. And I have a lot of contact with those folks. And I think the problem is, and this is a problem going for Hillary in the fall, is that there are a lot of people who are coming into politics for the first time, and they, I don't think, realize the seriousness of decisions that they might make. And that includes independents, and that includes new people coming into the process. Because if the Bernie folks stick with Bernie, they're going to, just like the former caller said, jeopardize a win for Hillary. And also, if the folks in the general stick with Donald, that is going to also jeopardize Hillary as well. So this is a very tricky election.
Well, don't you also think, Terrence, that there might be a number of Republicans who are going to sit this one out? There have to be a lot of Republicans who aren't very thrilled about Donald Trump.
There are Republicans who are going to sit this one out, but again, you know, I think people who are upset at who their nominee is and who will, as a result, stay home because of that, I think that's a pretty small group of people. But the caller makes an excellent point, though. The people who are now coming into this for the first time, and they are obviously the most passionate people because they've found something either on the Trump side or either on the Bernie side, and they want to fight this out. And I think why this election is going to be interesting and important and tricky, as he says, people cannot be allowed to, especially the most involved and engaged people, not understand the stakes of what they're doing. So, I think that is up to the candidates and the campaigns to make clear what is at stake in this election. And, if that's the failure on either side, then, you know, I think the consequences are probably going to be what they are.
Mm-hmm. We've seen Donald Trump move a little bit toward, if this is possible, being more presidential. He had a scripted speech last week in which he laid out his foreign policy. What did you make of that speech, and do you think that we'll see more such speech? Then he does. Then today he goes after Ted Cruz's father. So, you know, one day it's let's be presidential, and the next day it's, you know, let's talk about the National Enquirer. You never know what you're going to get from day to day. But will we see more of the so-called presidential Donald Trump?
I think if he is, particularly if he's the nominee, you will see an effort on his part to be serious about serious issues. I think even a campaign that has come to life and survived on this issue of just kind of anger and kind of passionate distaste for what's happening in Washington will attempt to kind of address what some of the obviously serious issues that the country faces. The speech itself was, I thought, remarkable in that my sense of what he did was he really explained each position very, very clearly and then took the other side and argued that position very, very clearly. You know, he basically said that, we had our allies who were taking advantage of us by not paying their fair share. And then he later in the speech argued that, our allies can't trust us because we're too predictable. And so the speech itself was successful in that I saw some people in the Republican establishment saying that this is exactly what Donald Trump needed to do and that they thought he did it well and that this is a speech that Mitt Romney should have given in 2012. But he is disadvantaged by the fact that the people who are most engaged and like him the most want to hear kind of the more combative, less conciliatory Donald Trump. And so I think that kind of speech, particularly given that he does not have the greatest grasp and is most adept at explaining these issues, could be a double-edged sword for him in that one, it's not exactly in his comfort zone, and two, it's not exactly what people who want to vote for him want to hear from.
Right. Good point. Nate, thanks for the call. Chris in Columbus, hi.
Yeah, just to dovetail off of that last comment, that's not what Bernie supporters want either. I think that a Trump-Clinton race, Trump will siphon a lot of Bernie supporters. I've been to rallies all over Wisconsin, and it seems to me that there's about a 20-25% people attending Trump and Bernie rallies have the same thought process and are looking for the same thing. And
which is what? What is it?
Very attractive to them people. I don't think either Hillary or Trump are actually good for America. They're both extra constitutional and going to be oligarchs.
And that 25% are interested in Trump and Bernie's stance on what issue, Chris?
I don't think they're issue voters. I think they feed off the anger and the frustration that Bernie and Trump are vocalizing for these people. They felt shut out. And I will say that there's probably more Republicans that will sit home for than Democrats because there's a greater sense of principle voting in the Republican Party. You have people who will say, he's not principled enough, I will not vote for him. Democrats tend to gloss over that, which is why you still have a Clinton in the race.
Okay. Terrence.
excellent points all. So, yes, there is this sense that there is this common thread between some of what Bernie's saying and some of what Trump is saying, and that they are at times talking to the same kind of anger and disenfranchisement in the country. How that plays out in the election is anybody's guess. However, to the previous point of new people coming into the process and kind of being part of it for the first time. The big question about a lot of these people is, will they show up to vote for anybody? And as a result, while their impact could be huge, there is a historical sense that, for the most part, when they are no longer happy, they tend to drift away.
Thanks very much for the call. We're going to continue phone calls. We're doing an All Things Political on Tuesday because I was off yesterday. So it's Indiana today, and we have a lot to discuss. Terrence Samuel is our guest, and Terrence is Washington politics editor for The Washington Post. He has also been with the National Journal doing their congressional coverage and the Philadelphia Inquirer, national correspondent, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, chief congressional correspondent for U.S. News and World Report, and he helped launch TheRoot.com in 2007. He was at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and we wanted to play some of how Larry Gilmore got the Wilmore got the Republicans and the Democrats. So we'll play a little bit of that and ask Terrence how it played in the House as we continue. And we'll be welcoming more phone calls. Our number, we have one line open. The lines are busy. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, please put your comments there. We love to read them after the show. And if you like the page, then we can inform you as to upcoming shows as well. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is @KDunnShow. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And my apologies, this is not Larry Wilmore. This is President Obama, who takes on the Democrats and addresses the Democrats and the Republicans at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Our guest was in the audience, so we'll ask him what he thought, and we'll also be taking more of your phone calls. Here's the president.
What an election season. For example, we've got the bright new face of the Democratic Party here tonight, Mr. Bernie Sanders. Bernie, you look like $1 million. Or to put it in terms you'll understand, you look like 37,000 donations of $27 each. I am hurt, though, Bernie, that you've been distancing yourself a little from me. I mean, that's just not something that you do to your comrade. Bernie's slogan has helped his campaign catch fire among young people. Feel the burn. Feel the burn. It's a good slogan. Hillary's slogan has not had the same effect. I've said how much I admire Hillary's toughness, her smarts, her policy chops, her experience. You've got to admit it, though. Hillary trying to appeal to young voters is a little bit like your relative who just signed up for Facebook. Yeah. Dear America, did you get my poke? Is it appearing on your wall? I'm not sure I'm using this right. Love and Hillary.
You were in the audience. He really is good at those, isn't he? It was very funny.
Not only is he good at it, he really is enjoying this last bit here. I mean, that dinner is, as you can tell, somewhat of a silly event. It is kind of fun to watch, you know, the president poke fun at himself and at other politicians. But it went on so long, and part of why it went on so long is that the president just took his time telling those jokes. I mean, the timing was great, but he just went on and on and on. This is the last one. And as you can tell, you know, the jokes are essentially kind of really stylized kind of renderings of what people think are a little bit true about every candidate.
Right.
The president was very funny. There was no question. He's gotten very good at this, and like I said, he seemed to be really enjoying and relishing this last one.
Yeah. Let's talk about Larry Wilmore for a moment. There was a lot about his using the N-word with the president. I can't remember who wrote this, but I'm wondering your response. Wilmore knows what all black men know, that there are at least two guys lurking under the surface. Wilmore wanted to be honest about it in a way that, while towing a line between acceptable and objectionable, it was culturally familiar. I thought that was an interesting analysis of why he used that word, and then they both did chest-pounding, too, which was interesting. You haven't seen President Obama do a lot of that, and I'm wondering why he did it then. And if you found that the audience was incredibly uncomfortable by his use of the word, or what was going on in the room?
So Larry Wilmore had a very tough job. Like I said, the president's become very good at this. And in the old days, it was that the president would get up and tell some jokes, and they would be okay. And then you'd have an actual entertainer follow that and tell some really good jokes. Well, the tables have kind of turned on that. And so you had the very funny president being followed by Larry Wilmore, who is, in fact, not a stand-up. You know, he's essentially a writer. So those jokes were really kind of intellectually kind of highbrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of what he was going for at the end was, you know, a little shock value, which he got. But he had two problems. One, he was following the president, who was funny. And two, he was following a president who, at this late stage in his presidency, is willing to tell race jokes. So the president actually begins the night with a joke about CP time, and everybody laughs. And by the time we get to Larry Wilmore, those jokes are a little more out of the box, and people are a little more uncomfortable. And I have to say that I was stunned when it happened at the end. And over probably the next 24 hours, came to think that it was much more sanguine than I thought at the moment.
Interesting. Let's go back to phone calls. We'll hear his take on the Republicans, the president, that is, in a moment. Let's go to Glenn in Lena. Hi, Glenn.
Hi. A few things. One thing really concerns me is the violence at some of the Trump rallies. The other thing is I think the Republicans are going to get hurt by not interviewing for Supreme Court nominees. Mm-hmm. And I would really like to see Joe Biden as the candidate. But would possibly Hillary pick him as a running mate?
Well, I don't think Joe wants the job. I mean, 16 years as a vice president for a guy who really, really wanted to be president would be too much to handle. No, I think, you know, part of what, when you think about it, what Hillary needs in a running mate, somebody who represents kind of the old Democratic Party, of which she is, you know, maybe the biggest figurehead at this point, is it's not going to be Joe Biden. I mean, the reasons to pick the traditional reasons to pick a running mate, you know, somebody who helps you win a state, somebody who reaches out to a certain demographic that you need to appease or bring on board, or somebody who represents a specific. Or somebody who brings some weakness that you don't have. So we're probably looking at somebody younger. We're probably looking at somebody from an important state. Or as has been suggested, there might be another woman to make this, you know, as clear a choice as possible. You know, I read something the other day that suggested that none of these things actually work. You know, Kennedy picked Johnson in 60 for Texas, and that helped him by 1 point. It's going to be interesting how that plays out. The violence at Trump rallies, it seems like there's been less of that lately, and I think there is some concern on the campaign side that they can't actually have this going into the general election. So I imagine part of what happens is you're in a fight, your supporters are worked up and engaged, and, you know, sometimes things get a little heated. If he actually wins, I imagine some of that early pressure goes away, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the fall.
Yeah.
I don't think they can allow themselves to be seen as a party that's kind of associated with that kind of violence at their rallies.
Peter and Shawno sends this email. This election is the first time we've been able to see behind the curtain at how much control the money has over this system. I want Sanders to split off into a third party. The popular vote would give him the win.
That's, I mean, that's obviously true. I don't know if it's the first time, but the money is huge, in part because it's so much more than it's ever been, and we've seen that it's coming from, you know, obviously a very small number of people, the really big money. It's really hard for a third-party candidate to win. I mean, there's just so much infrastructure behind the established parties that, and on some level, I think Americans actually believe in this system. You know, time after time, despite all the talk of a third party, they reaffirm that actually what they believe is that we should have two parties competing against each other.
Let's hear just a little bit. We don't want to run out of time before we hear the president take on the Republicans. Here he is at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Meanwhile, on the Republican side, things are a little more, how shall we say this, a little more loose. Just look at the confusion over the invitations to tonight's dinner. Guests were asked to check whether they wanted steak or fish, but instead, a whole bunch of you wrote in Paul Ryan. That's not an option, people. Steak or fish. You may not like steak or fish, but that's your choice. Meanwhile, some candidates aren't polling high enough to qualify for their own joke tonight. The rules were well established ahead of time. And then there's Ted Cruz. Ted had a tough week. He went to Indiana, Hoosier country, stood on a basketball court, and called the hoop a basketball ring. What else is in his lexicon? Baseball sticks, football hats. But sure, I'm the foreign one. Well, let me conclude tonight on a more serious note. I want to thank the Washington Press Corps. I want to thank Carol. Nah, I'm just kidding. You know I've got to talk about Trump. Just going to stop there. Come on.
The president of the White House Correspondents' Dinner. He is so good at that. All right, we have time for one more very quick call. I'm sorry, it's got to be quick. Don in West Salem. Hi.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say I'd like to see Sanders and Clinton on a ticket together when all this fighting is over with. I could see one of them taking care of the international stuff and one of them taking care of the stuff around their country. And
domestic. Is that a possibility, Terrence?
You know, that's the third option, right? There's you pick somebody to bring the party together.
Right.
You know, it's what happened with Reagan and Bush in 1980. I don't see it happening, but it's a distinct possibility.
Mm-hmm. Terrence, thank you very much for being with us. Enjoyed it.
I absolutely enjoyed it.
Good, I'm glad. Terrence Samuel, Washington politics editor for the Washington Post. He's also worked for the National Journal, Philadelphia Inquirer, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and was the founders of TheRoot.com. Just a reminder, election coverage tonight, Indiana primary, it's being streamed online at WPR.org. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production in our studios here in, oh, what a beautiful day it is in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio. Stay with us. What should we do with nuclear waste? Hour two.